Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people. And their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for June 1st, 2014. I'm your host, David McLaughlin. Joining me as always, welcome Catherine Smith.
Hello, everyone. Greetings
yes,
from Atlanta.
So this will be, yeah, good to have you on. And this will be our first show since the Georgia primary. And, of course, that, you know, that's just home state of Catherine and I, so we talk a little more, but had to take last week off, being Memorial Day. My kids were both in a soccer tournament that one game did not end until the Kudzu Vine actually would have begun. And so it just made sense to kind of take Memorial Day off, come back and give you a good update on Georgia and the rest of the South today on June 1st. But, Catherine, I'm, indulge me to tell you a little story that happened Friday before – we get into the hard politics, but this does have a political slant. I took my kids to Whitewater. That was part of their Christmas gift. And I took them on Friday because I got my final day was on Wednesday, and Thursday was kind of like just do every chore you've been putting off. And then Friday I said, I'll take you. And so I took them and went down all these slides. And there was this one slide I've been down before called the Gulf Coast Screamer or Gulf Screamer, something with Gulf in the title. Anyway, been down this slide before. Was not at all scared of it. I mean, I'm not a big height guy, but this one, you know, didn't, you know, scare me at all. And that's probably part of my problem because, you know, I am not short and I'm not small. So I'm a pretty good-sized object coming down a water slide. And so a lot of times I'll sit up to, and if you've ever been on a water slide, you sit up and you slow yourself down a little bit and then you can lay back and add a little more speed. Well, I must just not even think, thought about it, just laid out the whole time. So I'm going around this thing, and it's probably a good one-minute water slide, I guess. I don't know what it seems like. Well, on the last curve, on the plastic part, I come off of my float as it's just changing over to the brick wall, or not the brick wall, the concrete, whatever it is. And my face, the side of my face, I guess it's the right side of my face, slams into the wall.
Oh, no.
Initially, just being a football coach that for the past few years, it's just concussion video, and more concussion stuff. You think immediately, okay, am I seeing double? Am I seeing stars? Am I seeing black spots? You know, all those signs you have to ask kids if what's going on. None of that happened because, of course, like I said, I took my two kids, not my wife and I. And so I would have to driven back or not driven back because it would have been safe over an hour if I would have had anything like that. As I'm holding the side of my face, trying to get out, checking myself, and people kind of start seeing me not on my float or what have you, blood's coming down the side of my face. Not a lot, but some. So the Whitewater person goes, yeah, you probably need to go to first aid. I'm like, I agree. I'll go to first aid, no problem. So I walk halfway across the park to first aid. You can't help where the slide you got hurt on is and where the first aid is. So the guy, I said, you know, probably I need some aspirin. The guy goes, when I get kind of at the door, he's outside, he goes, we got ibuprofen. I said, well, that's fine. I don't care. And he goes, yeah, come on in. And then as soon as I come in, it's a good-sized room. He says, right over there is a machine. You put quarters in it, and you get your Band-Aid, you get your alcohol rub, you get your ibuprofen, just all of it's a quarter. And I look at him in my swimsuit. We've left everything in the car because that just doesn't make any sense to bring that into a water slide place. And I go, I don't have any quarters. And he's like, I said, it's okay. It's not that bad. I've got some aspirin in the car. I'll just get a napkin, press it against my face. I'll be fine. And so at that time some thunder started. So we walked out of the water park. But I was telling my friend, Scott Aikman, friend of the show, the same story. He said, hey, David, it sounds like you finally saw what the Republicans' health care plan is like. And I thought, that's about the truth, isn't it? That, you know, it would be pay a quarter, get this, pay a quarter, get that. Maybe not a quarter, but pay a certain amount and you get it, forget health insurance. I just,
thought that was kind of ironic that he thought of that immediately after I'd experienced one of the most unique first aid situations ever in my life. Catherine, have you ever been to Whitewater?
I've never been to Whitewater.
And that story probably doesn't make you want to go now, does it?
Well, I would never go anyway, but, you know, that's a whole other story. But my immediate thought, they're not going to give you any aspirin or anything because they're not going to want to have any liability. And that's probably why they do it that way. Because if you buy it from a vending machine, then you're taking the liability. I mean, I don't disagree with Scott's evaluation, but I think that in that particular situation, it probably has to do with liability more than anything else.
But here's the thing. As it currently stands now, and I guess if I wake up with a brain aneurysm tomorrow, maybe somehow I'll change their opinion. I'm not planning to go to a lawyer about this, but I would probably go for the water slide and use that tact over the bad aspirin. Wouldn't you think? I mean, if somebody was, I'd be like, hey, we're going to give you everything we can to make you happy because, you know, it seems like somebody would have a better lawsuit on the water slide part of the thing.
Well, that's a good point.
Liability stuff. You know, you should do this, that, and the other, and I'm sure I did something wrong, blah, blah, blah. I say this now because I feel like I've got a little cut on the side of my face, which you'll find, even if it's not perfect. You know, I'm 42. How much better am I going to get looking by tomorrow anyway? you know, I've probably hit my peak at some point in the past. So anyway, it's crazy. You just had to, you know, they couldn't even give you an alcohol rub, a Band-Aid, and some aspirin. So like I said, I had some glove compartment. It actually started thundering. It was time to go anyway. But just thought that would be a little personal anecdote to start off the show.
Well,
but now
the other thing to think about is what if it was more serious? You know, what if you did have, like, I mean, not so serious that you needed to see a doctor, but that you had a cut that was a little worse than what it was, and it just really needed a Band-Aid. Or what if And what if it wasn't you, but it was one of your children? And, you know,
and
you wanted to see, that's the thing. Like, you're an adult, and you can evaluate this pretty quickly and say, well, you know, I'm going to be fine. I can always run to my car, or we're leaving anyway, and we'll just go to the car. But what if it was a child, or what if it was, like, I don't know anything about that particular water park, but I imagine that there's times when, you know, a group of kids goes with, like, you know, either a birthday party or even with an organization. I don't know if schools do it or whatever. But what if one child got cut and just needed a Band-Aid? And, you know, I don't know. I think it's just short-sighted, I guess.
Oh, and here's the thing. I mean, a cut's going to happen because, I mean, honestly, I don't see how every time I walk around someone like that with that shoes on, I don't cut my feet. I mean, because you're walking around barefooted and you know, there's just little corners here and there that are, you know, not sharp, but not smooth, let's say. And so I'm surprised that, you know, there's not more cuts, and it just seems like that's something you take care of. I mean, there's plenty of places where they hand out Band-Aids, if you will. So just a little story there to start us off. But let's get into the Georgia primary results. The table's not completely set, but let's go into where it is set, the governor's race. Governor Deal, and he blew out his opponents, beat them both. If you combined their vote totals, almost their scores, their vote totals and took his, 2-1. I never really felt that, as unpopular as Nathan Deal is in some quarters, I don't think those quarters are the Republican primary electorate.
I agree.
Kind of showed that. What do you think, Catherine?
I agree with you. I think that, you know, I think that, you know, we'll get into overall reviews at some point, but I think this is indicative of sort of the overall indications of the primary that, you know, the loyal Republicans came out and voted, and they voted for their incumbent governor.
And yeah.
For the most part.
Yeah, and you see some polling that shows that he's not that popular. Maybe some people that voted And I do think a lot of folks voted in the Republican, you picked up a Republican primary ballot to vote on some local races more so than that governor's race in particular. And so some of those folks may have just been like, I don't really know much about John Barge, who had no money. David Pennington, who had kind of based his whole campaign on the Tea Party, and we may have to talk about that as a different topic onto itself on how the Tea Party did. But, you know, they just didn't get the traction that they thought they would. And so therefore, he looked good in the Republican primary sense of the word. And, of course, Jason Carter won the Democratic nomination without even really having to run at this point. Obviously, he's running because he has to raise his profile, name ID, and everything else for the general because he's a challenger. But he really didn't have to face off even nominal opposition. So I guess you could say, was that an advantage or disadvantage? And I guess some people could point to the governor's race compared to the Senate race when it all shakes out and says, hey, one had nominal opposition and one had none. Did that make a difference? But we're on to the general here. And the first poll out, Rasmussen came out, or was the most highly cited, even by Jason Carter.
David, I want to interrupt you for a second. You're going in and out a little bit on the
I will try to hold it a little closer to my face. If that's the problem, if it's something else, I don't know. I may can walk away outside where I have clear reception and try to do more
better
memory.
Now. It's better now.
Good. Well, I think that, you know, Jason Carter, the first poll showed that he's winning. Now, of course, a public policy polling poll was all taken. It showed a much different race than the Rasmussen poll. But now, of course, we've got the right after on Carter.
I'm losing you.
How big a deal do you think that was, Catherine?
Well, I think, you know how I feel about polls this early. I'm not real crazy about them, but I do think that they indicate weakness on the side of the governor, on the side of Governor Deal. And I think I think he's got plenty of time to try to shore that up, but Jason Carter also has plenty of time to get even stronger. So I think, you know, it's sort of a it may be a wake-up call for Nathan Deal that it's not going to be the walk in the park that he probably thought it was going to be against Jason Carter. And I do think that as we get closer to the election and as we see more visuals of the two of them, and I think that that's going to work against Governor Deal, because I think Jason Carter looks young and energetic and enthusiastic, and Governor Deal looks a little tired and a little old and a little dull.
And, Catherine, you well, me and
Pardon?
I don't know what the reception. You were cutting out on me then, and I don't know whose reception is bad. Hopefully for the listeners it's good. But you were talking about Jason Carter and what he's got to do. I know he came out with his – well, he did a sneak peek email for his first campaign ad. I thought it was kind of strange. I'm on his email list, yet they wanted me to sign up for his email list to see the sneak peek of the ad. I thought, well, what does that mean? I'm going to get two emails to sign up for it. Did you get that same last year?
I don't know if I got that email because I don't usually read the emails that I get from candidates.
And well, I'm actually more apt to read Jason's emails, not only because I know him, and I get like one or two a week, as opposed to Charlie Crist, in which until I unsubscribed, sorry Charlie Crist, I finally had to unsubscribe. I was getting like three a campaign, and once again, I didn't even sign up for the emails. And if I was getting one or two of those a week, I probably would just grin and bear it, if you will, but. It was too many. But we hadn't seen the ad yet. Feeling he may do better and handle it. Puts it online in a lot of Google ads and all, because that seems like an effective way to get it on. And it would be especially this summertime, in which if somebody's got their computer on and they've clicked on it, you know they're watching, as opposed to what are the TV ratings for reruns.
Right, exactly.
But we'll have to see, kind of what happens. Honestly, something interesting, there's two candidates running against them, a libertarian, Andrew Hunt, and that's kind of become normal. And then there's a socialist worker candidate named John Benson. I have a funny feeling this guy doesn't make the ballot. What do you think, Catherine?
Yeah, I would be surprised if he made the ballot. But what is it for governor, 20,000 signatures, something like that?
Yeah, that'd be a lot of signatures for somebody to get, you know, in a party in which nobody's really ever heard of. I mean, it sounds like something. You're like, okay, that's definitely, you know, the farthest left of the four parties, if you will. But nobody's sure what's going on there. Well, let's continue to move through. I guess we need to move to race, if you will, or the other big race in Georgia, and it was the biggest on primary night, certainly. And that was the U.S. Senate. There was a race on both sides, although one side was a little more contested than the other. Probably, I'll say, the biggest surprise for me, I thought it was going to be Michelle Nunn getting about 75% of the vote. And I thought Brad was coming somewhere about 10% of the vote. Then the other
David, I can't hear anything. That you're, David, everything is dropping out like every other word. I can't really understand what you're saying.
And that's what I'm getting too, Catherine, sometimes from you. I'm sorry. I don't know.
No, it's okay. I just want you to know because I can't answer your question if I don't hear it.
Well, and I say that. Let's see if it's on. That's the one bad thing. We just took tonight. None of us can't say, we'll call in. We'll call back in and this thing back in the old days. We could sort of do that with them. But the biggest surprise to me was, you know, I thought Michelle Nunn would get, you know, good chunk, 70% of the vote, and then Dr. Rad would come in set with, you know, somewhere close to double digits, you know, 9-10%. And then those other two folks would get, you know, the obligatory 2% or whatever. But instead, I know the math on that exactly, but I was really surprised, and Dr. Rad had, was this just a guy that politicos knew about and just the average Georgia voter had no clue who this was?
Well, I was also very surprised by those numbers. And I guess that I think you're right. I think it was, you know, just a few of us that even knew about Dr. Rad. And, you know, what did he get? Like, I mean, it was, I need to look it up, but it was very few votes.
Yeah, it was anemic. That word that people like to use when things aren't what they should be. It was really, really bad. And this is a guy that actually sent out direct mail. I got a piece of his direct mail. I mean, I saw no semblance of a campaign for another two candidates. I really, you know, the old saying, don't judge a book by its cover. I definitely think people looked at his name. And people had no clue who he was and probably said, well, that's a funny-looking name, and just, you know, didn't vote for him. And I will say I voted for Michelle Nunn, so it's not like I'm like, oh, I voted for Dr. Rad and I want him to do better because I supported him. But I did think he ran much more of a campaign than the other two contenders, and I always like to see people, you know, kind of if somebody works hard and the other two don't, I kind of want that at least, hard work to at least. Maybe that's where I'm coming.
Yeah, I agree.
Probably the nine.
I absolutely agree with you. I think he ran a good campaign. I will say, since you've said who you voted for, I did vote for Dr. Rad. He got 11,000 votes.
Yeah.
Again,
and Catherine,
you know,
you're not the only person that follows politics. I mean, when I say that, I say I respect you because you follow politics. You know what you're voting for. Another person, I'm not going to tell who they, you know, who they are, but they told me that they voted for Dr. Rad and they candidates to study the issues. And I'm sitting there going, how in the world do people like Catherine or this other person I'm thinking about, how do they vote for this? And there's not more votes for this guy. It was really strange, and I thought that was odd, and a big surprise for me.
Yeah,
and
it was a big surprise
course,
to me too.
Yeah, I think that was rather expected, so that's why it's kind of a
strange big surprise because we all kind of anticipated what the final outcome would be. And then on the Republican side, it was kind of like, at one point, it like Karen Handel might make the runoff. Then she started to fall back. Sure enough, it became kind of a two-person race. And really, if he had done better than people expected, he might have actually. He got really, really close to maybe even winning the first spot. I think at one point, it like, well, he might could possibly get to number one, but he stayed at number two. And now it's a runoff. And let's not talk about since the election. What were your thoughts on that Republican side?
Well, you know, it's pretty much exactly what I expected, that it would be Kingston and Perdue. At the end there, I thought that Karen Handel might have a chance to get in the runoff, but I think I've been saying all along that I thought it would be Kingston and Perdue. I kind of thought that Kingston would lead. I don't know why. I don't know what. I guess just because I would have thought he had better name recognition, but I think that David Perdue probably got some votes just because his last name is Perdue.
Yeah.
Not because he's David Perdue, but because he's a name Perdue.
Yeah. Once again, the breakup issue, and I really hope for listeners it's not going on like that. His support was and it worked enough because enough people said, well, I'm familiar with that name Perdue.
Okay, David, I have nothing. You're completely dead to me. I mean, silent. David?
Hi, back to Beth. You still there?
I just checked back in. I called back in.
My phone just flat out dropped. Now, one good thing, when I called back, I had two bars. We'll just see how good we can make this thing to see if this thing is usable. Of course, we do a live podcast, which is trickier. I've heard some podcasts, if they record as bad. And then I've heard really podcast producers and stuff that we just on the budget for, they actually, their audio goes bad and they scrap it and they have to re-record. We don't have that luxury. So we're going to go through it and, of course, hopefully if there's been some garble, maybe just scrub the thing ahead a few minutes and you'll get to hopefully this part from throughout will be good. Let's try to pick up back on the U.S. Senate race. And we were talking about Jack Kingston having all the momentum when we head to the little drop. And Jack Kingston, he's been endorsed by Karen Handel. That was kind of the big thing that happened to boost him. But it seems like there's been some other things since then that he's kind of has the momentum and he's kind of taken the lead. Would you agree with that assessment, Captain?
I'm sorry. I missed a little bit of that. Can you repeat the question?
Well, just the fact that Jack Kingston seems to have the momentum right now, because he's got Karen Handel's endorsement. I think some other things have happened as well to help him since the primary election. Have you seen that, or since that?
Yeah, I think that's true. But some people who are saying, well, you know, thanks but no thanks about the Karen Handel endorsement. there's always the risk of gaining momentum too early, because, you know, it is July 22nd, or is it July 30th? I think it's July 22nd. It's July 22nd. Is the runoff?
Yeah.
That's a long time from now.
Yeah, it's a while. Yeah.
And so you don't want to, you know, I never understand this kind of idea, but, you know, you don't want to peak too early and then lose momentum going into the runoff, especially, you know, and then you've got to take early voting into account, which I think we're finally recognizing as important to recognize that people start voting 3 weeks before the election, and you know you've got to be poised for that. And I think that it's something that all the campaigns have to be much more mindful of than they have been in the past. But yeah, I think Kingston has momentum. There's some other. Did Price endorse him? I think Tom Price.
Tom Price did. Yeah, and you think Gingrey might become next because, you know, Jack Kingston never really ran negative against Gingrey and Brown, for that matter, and they both served in the House with him. And so if all those folks then endorse him too, that's going to help him. Now, of course, I think you're absolutely right, Kat. I'm very astute that early voting is going to be really important because basically what you can do is, you know, you can call people, oh, I'll be on vacation, I'll be doing this. Well, go ahead and vote in the very first part of the thing, and you can just shuttle voters in. And you don't need big, massive numbers this time. What was the turnout? 19-point-something%. It was right around 20% of the possible voters. Well, for this runoff, you got to figure maybe. I mean, well, that's, of course, you got the Democratic and the Republican side. But on the Republican side, if you got 15% of the Republican voters. And it's not you getting off. I mean, if you got 15% come out and then you know you've got 10%, another guy's got 5%, you're going to win a huge victory. So just be able to shuttle those folks in. So both campaigns ought to really be trying to hire the best Republican GOTV team they can for the, you know, this part of the game, if you will. So it'd be interesting to see, but and you know it's something funny. You were mentioning, Catherine, how Jack Kingston's not that old of a guy, and the car made him look old, and different things made him look old. And it's funny. You actually see him and his wife, who was not what I was expecting, but definitely is younger as well. I mean, she doesn't look old, if you will, not some person driving an old jalopy or whatever he tried to look to himself at. He does look young on TV and does look telegenic, and I don't know why he pigeonholed himself in those ads, because when he was speaking on election night on all the newscasts, he seemed more youthful. And one interesting thing was, I think it was Peach Pundit, they did, or somebody on there did an analysis and showed how he just racked up massive numbers in South Georgia. And that really helped him defeat Karen Handel, because if Karen, it was just the metro area, Karen Handel would have defeated him for the second spot in the runoff. But as we know, Georgia is a whole state, and he produced big numbers in the Savannah, Waycross, St. Mary,
all along,
you know, all
the
that
South,
part.
All of South Georgia.
Yeah. Yeah,
all
I
along,
mean, from Augusta,
on both
Macon down, he just really racked up the vote. And that's one thing that, you know, candidates obviously need to figure out is, you know, Georgia is state. I mean, there are lots of votes in all of that land area. It's not as big as Atlanta by any means, but you can still get votes out of there. And that's what's going to be interesting, because if Jack Kingston is the candidate, then Michelle Nunn really can't do much. Maybe it hurts her, I should say, with those Perry roots, if you will. But then if David Perdue is the candidate, he doesn't seem to have that same connection even in middle Georgia like Jack Kingston did in South Georgia, and maybe she can do better in that rural southern area. So it's going to be interesting to see which candidate comes out of there. Do you have a feeling which one of the two Michelle Nunn wants?
Oh, I don't. I guess if it was me, I'd probably rather have Jack Kingston, because he does have a voting record, and you can start pulling votes from how he's voted, and you know, pigeonhole him on that. Whereas Perdue is kind of a blank slate, and you know, what can you do? You can talk about, you know, what they talk about on some of these anti-Kingston ads about some of his business practices and stuff, but that's not. I don't think those are as strong arguments as being able to say, you know, he wants to put school children to work to earn their school lunch, or, you know, whatever, like Jack Kingston does. So, that's only marginal. I mean, I would say that's just like a sort of off the cuff response. I'm not sure if I thought about it for a long time if I would still feel the same way.
I think you're right, and a lot of people, the political play say, your record will and can and will be used against you. And you've got somebody to vote, use that record against them. And of course, those school lunch comments, they're going to come back on Jack Kingston. But I will say this, I think he's proven himself to be a better politician at this point than David Perdue. Now, that probably shouldn't be a big shock. He's been at it for 20 years. As opposed, and maybe longer than that, because he may have been in the state house or state senate before winning, Congress. I don't know if he just went from nothing to Congress back in 1992. And David Perdue has never been a politician, so it would sense that Jack Kingston would be a better politician. But that's something to think of too, the fact that one seems to be more agile and more innovative in some ways in the way they're running. So. She's not going to choose her opponent anyway. She's probably better plan to raise her own profile at the same time. Have a plan against either one of them. Now, I will think about this when these polls came out, and it had a poll. Showed Jason Carter winning. It showed Michelle Nunn doing quite well. It was on Political Wire. There was this huge comment strand, and it talked. Oh, this is the proof of this show, because all these polls this week have been really bad for Democrats in a lot of other states, Kentucky and North Carolina, a few, and we'll get into those later for time. But people start saying, now, this is what I'm showing you. This is showing that Georgia's going to turn purple and blue faster than any state, faster than Texas. People are from Georgia. Do you think these polls are really proof of that?
I think that we have a good chance. If we run good campaigns and we have a good ground game, we meaning Georgia Democrats, if we run a good ground game and we work really hard, I think we have a good shot at this. That being said, if the Republicans run a really good ground game and work really hard, they'll be in a better position to win. So in order for us to win, we have to be really good, and they have to make some mistakes, I think. I think that's sort of where we stand. I had a long lunch conversation about this on Friday, and that's sort of one of my friends sort of basically said that. And I think that's a good point. I think, we have to be better than ever, and they have to make some mistakes for Georgia to go purple, if that's what – or whatever, however you want to say it.
Yeah.
And that would mean, if we can – that would be – and by that I mean winning the governorship and the Senate and hopefully one other constitutional office. I don't know which one. But one other one would be nice.
Yeah, and we'll get into some.
Maybe labor or agriculture. I think we have a good shot at agriculture with Chris Urban.
Well, and we can go through them and give a little tighter reading on all of them, including that one. But I do think you're right. It's not just going to happen. This is going to be such a tough year. I do think that it shows that Georgia – is changing faster than a lot of us even realized. I mean, I think we knew that Georgia would change, but now here's the trick. I do think you have to have some white voters change with it. I mean, I don't think we're going to win Georgia if we get 1 in 5 white voters. 1 in 4 probably is not going to get it. You probably need close to 30%, I think, of the white vote, and that's doable. I don't see why that's not doable to lose the white vote 70-30. I mean, that seems like a plausible number to grasp for. And if we could get that and get decent turnout among all other voters, then that's a winning coalition in Georgia, and you can build from there. But I think that's going to be the key, too, is actually turning some voters. And here's the thing. I don't think four out of five white voters are happy with Nathan Deal at this point. Now, four out of five that go vote might be on Election Day, or, you know, three out of four on Election Day might be happy, but I still don't even think even three out of four white voters is happy with Nathan Deal. It's all in turning out those white voters that don't turn out, and I know that's real tough.
Well, it's all in turning out all the voters that don't vote.
All the voters. But you see those numbers, and you go, that's trouble.
Well, you know, I don't think that the 20% primary voters is so surprising. It's disappointing, but I'm not surprised by it. It's when we have, you know, like, you know, 50, 60% turnout in a general election that is so discouraging to me. That's when you really get discouraged. And so I think that, you know, that's going to be really important. We're going to have to identify where the voters that can win this for us are and focus on them. And I think it's going to require, you know, very disciplined focus and a lot of money. You know, it's going to be a lot of money. But really disciplined focus. Like, we can't be distracted by shiny things in places where we can't win votes. And, like, we know where the votes are, and we need to go there and get them. We have enough, you know, technology and data to understand where those votes are, and we need to just go there and get them.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't think we should try to not change voters' minds. I mean, that's why I think a lot of times if someone's going to be a good political consultant, they ought to have to work in a state like, say, Montana, where there's no demographic shifts. It's just these are the voters, and sometimes Republicans win and sometimes Democrats win. And it's how do you convince people to change their mind? I mean, it would be very rewarding to me if you found somebody. I voted for Bush twice, and I voted for McCain, and I voted for Perdue and Deal, and I'm kind of sick of Deal. I think that Georgia could use something else. And if we could switch those kind of voters, those kind of folks that show up every time, it sure would make life easier because it would be a twofer. You pull one away from them and add one to us, and if you did some of those, you'd move things in a hurry. But, you know, somebody's got to figure that out that works for these campaigns, and they hadn't called me up yet, and I don't know that I'd know the answer anyway. I just have the goal. Well, let's kind of move through. What they call the number two, you know, seat on the statewide ballot, because we're not talking about the federal election, Lieutenant Governor, we knew the candidates were going to be. We still know the candidates are going to be. Catherine, I say this one, it goes how the governor's race does. And honestly, I do think there's a decent chance that Jason Carter could win and Casey Cagle could be his lieutenant governor, just like when Sonny Perdue won, Mark Taylor was his lieutenant governor. I don't think. It would have to be a big Democratic wave to then carry Connie Stokes over, too, wouldn't you say?
Yes. I think it is possible that you'll get some voters that vote for Jason Carter and Casey Cagle. Weird as that sounds.
No slight to Connie Stokes. It's just I don't think her race is going to get a lot of attention. And so, therefore, it would have to be a big Democratic wave to pull her across. Casey Cagle, I think at one time was more unpopular, but he's kind of calmed down and not as unpopular as the Republicans or the average Georgia voter, probably like Casey who, honestly. And then moving on to Secretary of State, Brian Kemp, I mean, I think with the voter ID bill, a lot of Democrats have problems with him, but I don't know, once again, the average Georgia voter thinks much about that race. Catherine, any thoughts there?
Well, you know, this is a little bit unfortunate because I'm not sure. I mean, I'm not very happy with Brian Kemp, not just because I'm a Democrat, but because I don't think he's done a very good job of the basic functioning of the Secretary of State. You know, I don't know if I told this. No, I couldn't have because it was after our last show, but the day before primary day, I voted on election day, and the day before, what I usually do when I vote is I go and download and print the sample ballot, and I just go through it and make sure that I know how I'm going to vote on everything, so I don't get, you know, slowed up in at the voting booth, you know, so I can quickly go through. And so I went to the Secretary of State's office that morning, and I tried to go to my voter page, which is, you know, a basic function of that website where you put in your birth date and your county and your last name or whatever, and it takes you to a little page that says this is your voter information, and then you can click on a link to your county to print out a sample ballot. Well, I did that, and it came up with an error message saying that they couldn't find there was a problem with my registration, they couldn't locate it. Well, I knew that I was registered because I had just gotten a registration card in the mail, so I knew that it wasn't my registration, and I was pretty confident that it was something with the website because it took a really long time, and there was a lot of, you know, I had to try a couple times before I even got that message. Well, you know, I'm pretty savvy on the internet and savvy about politics. So I kept trying, and then I contacted my friends at the League of Women Voters and let them know that this problem was occurring and asked them if they could, you know, investigate it, and they did, and within a couple of hours, the website was functioning again. Well, you know, that's me, and, you know, I'm inside baseball, but what about your average voter that decided to do the same thing, because it's not an uncommon thing to do, to print out a sample ballot or to look at the election, you know, the day before, and they got that same message, and then they're like, oh, geez, you know, I'm not registered, something's wrong with my registration, forget it, I'm not even going to bother this time. Or, you know, try to make a phone call to the Secretary of State, and who knows what kind of you know, rabbit hole that would take you down. So I was very disappointed in that. I'm glad they fixed it and it was fine, you know, the rest of the day. And there's a lot of other functionality that has been spotty. So I would say I'm not happy with Brian Kemp. But I also will say that I don't, in reviewing the expertise and experience and skills of both of the candidates that were running for the Democratic Secretary of State slot, I didn't see a lot. I mean, I'm not saying they're not qualified, because I don't know them personally, but it didn't pop out like, oh yeah, this person is, you know, the perfect candidate for Secretary of State. So it'll be interesting to see how our Democrat Doreen Carter, if she's able to convince us that she is, you know, does have the necessary skills. And I'm open for that. I'm ready to be convinced, but I didn't see it in the run up to the primary.
Yeah, honestly, her and Gerald Beckham, I know much about them. I wanted to say Gerald Beckham, was he a state like representative at one point, or maybe he ran for state rep?
He was a mayor.
A mayor, so, but she was in city council. I really didn't know much about him. I think I voted for Gerald Beckham. Like I said, I think I gave him maybe credit that I shouldn't have, thinking he was a state rep. But yeah, obviously neither one of these candidates were in the vein of Max Cleland or Kathy Cox, not that Brian Kemp is either. And so that's going to be a tough win. But now let's move on to another race that I do think has a little bit of an angle on it. Sam Olens is the Attorney General, probably one of the more moderate Republicans elected statewide. And I'm not saying he's moderate. I'm sure some of his campaign will say I called him dirty. But if the Republicans go in the South, he's probably a little more moderate. He's been in charge of Cobb County government and what have you. But he's run against Gray Heck, who has been a state rep and state senator. Not that that's going to be enough to, you know, it's like push Gray Heck through, although Gray Heck will fundraise and run a kind of a real-looking campaign. But the thing I think to make this attorney race a little trickier is this controversial gun law that polls are showing is not backed by the Georgia electorate anywhere like the Georgia politicians backed. I'm not going to say people are probably as strongly against it as you and I are, but they're definitely not for it like the Republican legislature was this past time. Do you think the Attorney General has to interpret it, enforce it, over the next few months. Do you think this could cause, I'm sorry, Sam Olin's difficulty?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear everything you said. Are you talking about the gun law?
The gun law, because the Attorney General is the enforcer of laws, whether or not I agree with them or not. And I don't really know Sam Olin's opinion on the gun law, but he has to enforce it.
Yeah, he has to enforce it, and I don't know. I think that's a really good point, and I think it may have an impact on the election. I think Sam Olin's is generally pretty well thought of as far as, I mean, like you said, he's, you know, certainly more moderate than some of our Republicans, and hasn't made a big name for himself as Attorney General, hasn't really done anything particularly provocative or anything. So it may be interesting to see if he does respond in some way about the gun law or about something else over the next few months to make a name for himself and to give him some, you know, bona fides for the election. But I think that'll be an interesting contest. You know, Greg Hecht is a tough candidate. You know, he fights a fight.
Yeah, I mean, he's more of an experienced politician. I didn't realize Greg Heck would come back and run, but obviously he is a lawyer. He picked the right race at the right time to get on the ballot, you know, and get there, and he's going to be one of the more formidable candidates of the down-ballot candidates, if you will. Well, let's move on to state school superintendent. One of the only races that's going to have a runoff on both the Republican and the Democratic side. I do think I actually predicted the top two vote getters on both sides. On the Republican side, it was Mike Buck, and on the Democratic side, it was Valerie Wilson. Now, I think Richard Woods is the other. I know he's the other candidate, and I want to say he pretty handily won that second spot. The lady that even one of our Republican commenters, Mike Hassinger, he came on and he thought that lady, Mary Kay, he starts with a B, sounds sort of Italian. He said she was pretty much crazy. And so I noticed she finished third. So I was, and after seeing her, she had academic freedom, which usually means freedom from academics or freedom from, you know, science and common knowledge and everything else. You know, those people are scary. So I'm really, really glad that, you know, Mike Buck, a public educator, and Richard Woods, I believe, is a public educator. They both, you know, they're the Republican nominee one way or the other. They're, you know, public teacher, probably not going to, you know, promote homeschooling over, say, Gwinnett County schools or something crazy like that. And then on the Democratic side, Alicia Morgan, she kind of slipped by. I noticed that at one point Denise Freeman was leading when it was more rural areas, and then when it came into the metro, she slipped in the second spot. But Valerie Wilson, you know, led pretty much wire to wire. And so those two candidates will face off. I have a feeling it's going to stay Buck and Wilson. The general, do you think of that?
Well, you know, I was kind of surprised. I thought Alicia Morgan would do a little better. I thought she would come in first, actually. I was pleased that Valerie Wilson did so well. I think that it's going to have a lot to do with how much money goes into that race, and I think there's going to be a lot of money from the charter school people funding Alicia Morgan's race. I know we've seen her raise money from those folks before, and if they, you know, put in as much money as some people think they might, which is considerable, then that might put that race in tighter ranks, you know. It might increase the, you know, viability of Alicia Morgan.
Yeah, this is where it gets real sticky here. Put a lot of, you know, push. The smell piece I got went on, and I didn't get many, but this was Wilson, and it was GAE all over the place. Not sure she paid, but GAE was all over the thing, the Hoover Education Association of Educators. And I think that's probably where she pushed into first. Let's just say that the charter money, the school privatization folks come in and fund Alicia Morgan's campaign heavily. Let's say she wins this thing. Then let's say Mike Buck is the Republican nominee, and then GAE goes, we got a lady that wants to privatize the schools, wants to support charter schools, all this different stuff. We got a guy who's probably going to, with John Bard's stuff, and John Bard's promoted public schools, had no problem coming for, and did some things to streamline public schools to make them better. You know, not anti, you know, school, if you will. And so I would think GAE would then be very, very tempted to, for the probably the first time in their history, to endorse the Republican candidate. Well, that would complicate things for, I think, the top of the ticket with Jason Carter. So if I'm Jason Carter, I'm saying, let me not get this. I want the teachers, or at least the Democratic or swing voter teachers, to be solidly where they can be in my camp. Valerie Wilson's a much safer situation for me, given that I know the Republican nominee is going to be slack job to the right of Alicia Morgan on schools. And so you said that this could be, you know, complicated and then impact other races?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think it absolutely could.
I think the Democratic Party cannot get directly involved, but I think it's just safer for everybody involved to have Valerie Wilson be the nominee. Because like I think I said a few weeks ago, if Mike Buck and Alicia Morgan were the nominees, I have never, ever, ever voted Republican in my life, never thought about it for 2 seconds. But I'd have to think long and hard about that one. And, you know, if that happens, and I really don't think it will, but if that happens, it'd have to be a discussion, you know, closer to November on the kudzu vine, if you will. But, you know, I see all that involved, if you will. Well, let's get into your race that you were talking about, the agriculture commissioner. Gary Black hadn't really been doing anything controversial or non-controversial, just kind of been there, probably not made the name for himself. Tommy Irvin did, but, hey, I will be fair, he's only had 4 years as opposed to, like, 40 for Tommy Irvin. And Tommy Irvin's grandson, Chris Irvin's, run against him. Catherine, you think this is the down-ballot race to watch. Tell us why.
Well, I do. I think, you know, I think that just, again, the legacy, the, you know, family name, the, you know, great respect that I think everyone always had for Tommy Irvin, I think that helps him. I think he, from what I gather about his campaign, he's already, you know, touring the state, visiting all the farmers and going to all the picnics and all the, you know, events that are important in the sort of agricultural community, if you will. And I, from what I gather, I have a friend who's working on a campaign. Gary Black isn't showing up at any of those things and isn't making a big name for himself at some of those events, which isn't a big surprise. So I think that Chris Irvin does have a chance, and I think I think he would be really good too. I mean, he seems like a, you know, he's got the legacy of his grandfather, and he's a farmer, and he's knows the family business, so to speak. And so I do think it's a race to watch. I do.
Yeah. I definitely think it's, you know, more going to be more competitive than a few of the other ones we've mentioned. Keeping on going down the list, Ralph Hudgens was the incumbent. He has made some controversial comments, in particular about the president, which, you know, and, the, you know, president's health care plan. You know, I think he made some about a mile or two from my house over at the Floyd Airport, if I'm not mistaken. And Liz Johnson won the race to run against him, and she beat Keith Hurd, which Keith Hurd had been a long-time state rep. And so I was a little bit surprised, but I guess in some ways you got to say, hey, I respect that a little bit, that if she can beat Keith Hurd, you know, full disclosure, I've, you know, been a Keith Hurd's been one of my clients in the past, not this race, but in the past, and know him personally, like him. So I voted for, but Liz Johnson, apparently she's an insurance agent. I think Keith Hurd was too, so both of them had, and she was on the DNC at one point. I guess that was before my time with the DPG, or maybe after my time. I don't know. What do you know about Liz?
Well, you know, she's been very active in Democratic politics since I've been involved in politics, and statewide. You know, she's been a state committee member and was a DNC member for, I don't know what, if it was just one term or if she filled out Mary Long's term. I don't know. So, but
that's what it was. She's after me then. Yeah.
Yeah, it was after you. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that she used that, circuit of people to really push her campaign. And I was a little surprised myself. I thought Keith Hurd would, I mean, again, I like him too, and did support him, and but I mean, I think that Liz Johnson would certainly be an improvement over Ralph Hudgens. You know, he's the one who said, you know, his single, didn't he say something like, you know, the single most important thing to do is to stop Obamacare and stop Medicaid expansion.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's like,
yeah, cutout might be that we can get a convenience store might be better than Ralph Hudgens, but you know, that's our opinion. Let's go to the last statewide race. And Catherine, it's the state labor commissioner race. And this one was decided. There was only one Democrat, only one Republican. Bart Butler is the incumbent. Robin Schiff is the state rep. Is challenging him. I gotta have to wonder, Catherine, the number one way, maybe not the number one way, but the new way people like to find jobs is to go on and do what?
On the internet.
On the internet. And so the labor commissioner is supposed to put people to work. Robin Shipp, she does have a website that you can donate and volunteer and do a few things up. It's built by a website builder, but you know, at least it has some functionality. Our current labor commissioner, and this isn't the official site, this is just his campaign site, it consists of a link to a fundraiser invitation from 2011. If you wanted to go to that, Catherine, you'd have to use your time machine to go back 3 years. a picture of him. It does have a disclaimer and an email link. And then I will read all the text off of the body of the website, and this won't take long. Thank you for your support during my campaign. I look forward to working with you for the next 4 years. Let's put Georgia back to work. Mark Butler. I mean, that's it. And by the way, it looks like he wrote that, or somebody wrote that for him, just days after he won in 2010, and hadn't put anything new on it. Don't want to, can't volunteer, can't donate, no news stories about anything this joker's done. You know, once again, number one way people look for jobs on the internet, and this guy's in charge of getting people employed, and that's what he's got for us. Just a little scared. Maybe he rolls out something new in the next few weeks. Once again, we can take credit if he does, but just a sad state of affairs. We got time for one congressional race. And, Catherine, I'm going to go to District 11.
Okay.
It is the only district, I believe, that the Republican runoff will decide who serves. This is to fill Phil Gingrich's seat. Bob Barr and Barry Loudermilk. I tell you what, one has been my congressman, one has been my state representative. Both of those, I will say, was against my will. I never thought that I would so badly want to see my former congressman return to Congress over my former state rep, who I think Bob Barr would be such a better choice than Barry Loudermilk. It's just crazy. But Bob Barr really came on, and Ed Lindsay, who was a state rep, and Tricia Pridemore, who's apparently a big-time player and deals political machine, finished third and fourth. I believe Tricia Pridemore actually finished ahead of Ed Lindsay. They didn't even come close. The district, supposedly, of the metro districts is one of the more moderate Republican-leaning ones. How did it get in with these two as its leading vote getters, Catherine?
Well, I was surprised by those numbers too. I figured Bob Barr might get a lot of votes just because people know who he is. You know, it's name ID. But I agree with you. When I look at that, I'm like, oh yeah, give me Bob Barr.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, the thing about Bob Barr is, you know, he is, you know, obviously Republican and conservative, but he's also kind of a, you know, civil rights kind of guy. You know, he's been outspoken about, you know, constitutionality of things, and he was outspoken, I think, about the Patriot Act, if I'm correct.
Yeah.
And he's partnered with the ACLU on things. So, I mean, I obviously he's not, you know, doesn't share my values by many stretches. But I think he is probably of the two smarter and
maybe more open-minded. I mean, even
maybe,
if
yeah, more open-minded
you,
is probably
you longer than Loudermilk, which I get the idea Loudermilk would, you know, you better agree with him or else. Well, folks,
yeah.
If you suffered through the audio difficulties, again, our apologies. Tune in next week. Hopefully we'll have great connections on our cell phones, as David Neer will be our guest in the second half of the show. But until then, it's been the Kudzu Vine.
Good night, everybody. Good night, David.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity?